What's up, friends? Welcome into another episode of the 3T's podcast, Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders. I'm your host, TB. And from this point on, I am not naming the episode number because after we hit 10 last week, it is all gravy from here. So we're going to get back into the basics of this podcast today, folks. Last week was a bit of a mess with the passing of Hulk Hogan. I felt like I kind of had to step out of my comfort zone, do a little bit of a different show. But here we are this week. We are back, and I'm excited to dive in. So, Tailgaters, Bills Mafia, you are on the clock. How the heck are we feeling? Training camp is well underway. In fact, by the time this podcast comes out, there will only be a few practices left, and the coverage is everywhere. Every time I get on socials, every time I'm checking the computer, it's one update after another, and I'm not too sure how I feel about training camp thus far because there's two sides to the spectrum, right? The way I see it, when training camp hits, it's either the worst thing in the world just happened or the best thing in the world just happened. I remember last year when we were trying to adopt this everybody eats mentality with the wide receiver core, and we're wondering who's going to be the 4, 5, or 6 wide receiver on the team. You know, you're getting little splash plays from this guy, splash plays from that guy, and it seemed like all the coverage was, oh my God, this is the next Andre Reed. He's amazing. And I'm just like, oh my God, this guy's probably not even going to make the team. And so I feel like we are on the opposite end of the spectrum, except this year we only want to talk about injuries. And don't get me wrong. We're going to dive into the injuries because it's crap. But I feel like every time someone twists an ankle or, you know, rips a fingernail, the freaking sky is falling and it's getting absolutely ridiculous. If y'all didn't hear about the Maxwell Hairston news this week, well, we're going to dive into that because that was a crap show. The way that injury was handled, and it was just a mess. But we go all the way back because I know I didn't get to talk about this last week, but training camp starts and it's like right off Jump Street, people are getting hurt one after another. We didn't even get guys get to the first practice without being hurt. I mean, camp starts and all of a sudden Dawson Knox is hurt and Spencer Brown is hurt. He's got a back injury. Dawson Knox is dealing with a hammy and Dalton Kincaid is hurt and Curtis Samuel. I mean, I could go down the list and I'm going to hit on most of this, but it's easier to talk about the guys that are healthy and on the field rather than list all the freaking injured players. And so as we go through this, I'm just like, what is going on? Like, and the amount of hamstring injuries, I know it's hot, but are you guys not stretching? Have you not done anything? And I know they're professional athletes, but anyway, my point is I'm starting to wonder about the amount of camp coverage out there. How many people are actually covering not just this team, but teams in general? And I'm just wondering, is it too much? Have we gotten to the point where it's almost sensory overload? Every little detail of camp is magnified to 100 power, right? So it's either the greatest catastrophe to ever befall us as Bills fans, or it's this guy's the next Jim Kelly or Thurman Thomas, or every time somebody makes a single play, we're talking about this guy who's like the 7th, 8th wide receiver on the depth chart, or the 5th cornerback or the 6th punt returner. We're like, this guy's awesome. And then we got to talk about his odds to make the team. Look, folks, there are not too many spots on this team. So most of the people that you've never heard of, you're never going to hear from again. They're just not going to make the team because there's no spots. That's the good thing. When you have such a good team, you have so little turn. And Brandon Bean and McDermott do a really good job of, there's not a ton of new faces. I know we revamped some of the defensive players, but for the most part, the core is back. They're back and they look good. But yeah, I mean, the injuries at the start of the camp, like I said, Knox, Spencer Brown, Curtis Samuel, shock, Curtis Samuel's hurt. Could anyone see this coming? Curtis Samuel, hamstring injury. Elijah Moore, we just signed him. He's hurt. Dalton Kincaid, they were saying he was dealing with a knee injury. He dealt with a knee injury last year. Awesome. Great. Tyrell Shavers got carted off early in camp. Apparently he's back. Cedric Van Pran Granger. I know he was supposed to be in line for like that swing tackle position. He's hurt. We have Alec Anderson. The news came out that he actually had to have knee surgery and he's not going to be available for a couple weeks. He's probably going to miss the whole preseason. So that sucks. Cole Bishop. Anybody know why? Anybody forecast Cole Bishopper? I mean, he missed a good chunk of last year. It set him back, and we were counting on Cole Bishop being the man at one of our safety positions, and he's already got a quad problem. Mike Edwards allegedly collapsed at camp the other day due to heat exhaustion. Great. Awesome. Caden Prather, the rookie wide receiver, he's got a hamstring injury. Terrell Bernard has a hamstring. Everybody's got a freaking hamstring injury. I don't know, eat some bananas, do some yoga, do whatever you got to do, get on the freaking field. But this hamstring crap, like, what are our trainers doing? Darian Williams got a calf problem. But the big news of the week was our number one draft pick, cornerback Maxwell Hairston. Now, he goes down earlier in the week, and the trainer ran out and was doing tests on his knee, and immediately it's like the JFK film. Oh, what test is he running? And oh, his face doesn't look good, people. He looks like he's done for the season. And it's like instantly people are like, oh, he's done for the season. And he kind of walked off on his own power. He needed a little help. Then the social media stuff blew up, right? Because we didn't really hear anything. And then a report came out that he tore his ACL. And it was from a Buffalo source, some sort of podcast or whatever. I don't really remember. But that story broke that he had torn his ACL and he was going to miss the whole season. And my daughter actually texted me this, and I'm like searching frantically trying to verify this story because I'm trying not to, you know, instantly go down a dark path with our number one draft pick, who's a cornerback who we desperately are going to need. But here we go. Alleged that he had torn his ACL and he's out. But I couldn't find any verification of this. And so I think we went almost the rest of the day until late that night. It finally came out that it was just a LCL sprain, LCL injury to his knee. He was only going to miss maybe a couple weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And then hopefully by the regular season, he'll be good to go. But you have totally opposite ends of the spectrum here with the same injury, and the Bills are saying nothing. And they had a day off right after this happened, so nobody was talking about it. And this goes back to my point. I almost feel like there's too much coverage. And so what I want to do today, as we work our way through this show, I came up with a lot of would you rather conversations. So this point brings me to my very first would you rather question of the day. As far as camp coverage, you got choices, right? You have two choices. I personally am to the point, and I consume it all, so maybe I'm part of the problem. Do we have way too much camp coverage? Would you rather have no training camp coverage, and for this 2-week, 3-week period prior to the start of the season, you actually are flying blind? You have no idea what's happening with your team. Would you rather be radio silent, social media news story silent, and just not know? And then, oh, here comes week one, and now it's like the floodgates open and you have all this information pouring at you at once? Or do you want to know every single freaking little minute detail and have to consume all of it? Do you want all or do you want nothing? I'm almost to the point now with all these stories that come out and how the sky is falling. It's like Chicken Little, one player after another, one day after another, one play after another. Like I said, they're either the best player ever to play the game and they've never actually been on an NFL field and taken a snap, or it's the worst case scenario of every one of these freaking injuries. So question one, would you rather all or nothing? Would you have no camp coverage and you just simply show up week one ready to go and this is what happened? I'm kind of to the point now where maybe I want to see what that looks like. Maybe I would love to have that option where everything could be secluded from me until the first week of September, and we show up week one against Baltimore. Hey, who are we rolling out in the field? I'll be there at that home opener. I want to know who's on the team. Maybe, you know, 3 hours before kickoff, here's the injury report, here's who the final roster is, because I'm listening to the radio shows, I'm checking out the podcast of all these Bills programs I listen to, and it's overwhelmingly like, it's just like I'm getting beat over the head with the same information, and no one can verify anything, and it's all just guessing. We're all just guessing. Well, who's going to make the 53? Well, you know 52 of them already, so can we just stop with the other nonsense about the rest of the roster and just, anyway, maybe I'm the only one, but that's that. So injuries, yes, they're a problem. Hopefully we can get this stuff cleared up and be ready to roll, because anything, if anything's going to slow this team down this year, it is going to be the injury bug. But some good news. James Cook has showed up to camp just like I said he would. He showed up to minicamp. And as I said before, many weeks ago, he's not going to show up to minicamp and not show up to training camp. So he's here at training camp. He's practicing. He looks fine. But he's not coming off his request for a new deal. He's still adamant that he wants to get this worked out. There are signs pointing to a deal getting done. I don't know, or at least both sides being willing to work on a deal. I don't know if these talks are continuing. Nobody comes out and says anything, which is kind of stupid. I mean, we talk about all this other crap. Why can't you just be honest about where we are with contract negotiations? But I get it. Look, if James Cook is still holding strong to the $15 million a year, I just don't see Brandon Bean giving him that money. I just don't. And I don't think, as a Bills fan, I've said this before, I don't think it's a smart investment of our money. So, but he's there. He's at camp, which leads me to my next would you rather question of the day. And it's about James Cook. So if he's looking for 15, I just don't think Bean's going to give him that. But would he be giving him 11, 12, 13? Would he be happy in that range? And so I was thinking about it. Would I be okay if we offered Cook an extension of 3 for 33, 11 mil a year, maybe throw a signing bonus in there to get it up to like 35. So 3 for 35, right around an average of 11, 11.2 every year. Where would we want to see that end up? So would you rather re-signing James Cook to a deal worth approximately three years for $33 million or save that money and use a second round pick in next year's draft on a running back? So there's your options. Re-sign Cook to a, you know, top, that's a, probably a top 6-7 running back in a league value. But you know, when you're paying your quarterback plus upwards of, you know, in the $50 million range a year, you have a lot less money to spend on some of these other players. I'm not saying Cook isn't good. We've talked about this before. I did almost half a podcast on the James Cook scenario and how we should go about saving money or how we could come up with ways to pay for him. But that's a lot of money for a running back. And we have two good backups behind him that who knows? Who knows what their role is going to look like moving forward in the offense? And so there's the option to you folks. Would you rather pay James Cook $33 million over 3 years, or would you rather save that money, use it somewhere else, and invest a second round draft pick on a running back? I'm not really sure. That's a tough one to me. That one is a really tough one to me. I think, all things considering, I think I might rather go draft a second round running back, because we're getting to the point on this team where at the end of every year, we do really well with re-signing our core players. I'm not saying James Cook isn't a core player, but I think the drop-off from him to Ray Davis, Ty Johnson, isn't that big. And I think we could immediately recoup that loss with a second-round pick in the draft. Younger, fresher, less mileage, and a whole heck of a lot cheaper. So there you go. There's my second would-you-rather of the day. Other good news. Joey Bosa has showed up to camp. He is, you know, by all accounts, looking great. The injury he dealt with, or whatever ailment he was dealing with in the preseason prior to minicamp, seems to have passed, and he is looking good. Now the Bills really are really going to have a struggle on their hands this year about how to balance his workload. I think it's going to be similar to the Von Miller situation. I hope we get more out of Joey Bosa than we did out of Von. Now when we signed Von, that first year was awesome. And then he obviously gets hurt, so it was a crap show after that. But we got Joey on the hook for 1 year, and by all accounts, he's loving it there. He said, you know, he made some comments about his previous employer and some comments that he feels rejuvenated here in Buffalo, and like, let's hope so. I really hope the culture and all the talk we hear about this being a good place to be and how players want to come to Buffalo, I really hope that's true. You never know what's nonsense and what's real, but I would like to think that you hear it time after time that it's a good culture, it's a good atmosphere, it's a good place for players to come and kind of reinvent themselves and fit in and find joy in playing football again. So I really want to believe that's true for Joey, that, you know, he has that fire lit back under him again. If we get a full season of healthy Joey Bosa, I think it's going to be great. It's going to be well worth the investment. But this leads me to my third would you rather question of the day, and it surrounds Joey Bosa, because you have to manage his workload. You have to. So if during the regular season we're only getting 40 to 50% of the defensive snaps and then we ramp it up in the playoffs. Is that ideal? I'm not sure the best way to handle that. But always the dark cloud looming over Joey Bosa has been injury history. And how do we compensate for that? How do we deal with that? So I came up with a would you rather Joey Bosa scenario. It's a bit of a negative, but that's okay because I'm just trying to have some fun here. So here's the would you rather. Would you rather Joey Bosa misses 12 regular season games? We miss out on the number one seed because the Bills are supposed to be one of the top 2 to 3 teams in the AFC. I think we have a legit shot at the one seed. But would you rather he misses 12 regular season games, which hurts our quest for the one? We lose out on the one, but playoffs come. Joey Bosa is fully ready to go, and we have him at full strength for the playoff run. So, you know, does that give us a 2, a 3, a 4? Whatever. It doesn't matter. Would you rather that or the flip side? Joey Bosa plays most of the year. We nail down the one seed, but he gets hurt and we don't have him available for the playoffs. Now, this is a tough one. I was really going back and forth on this. And I looked back at last year. What were we missing in the playoffs? We were missing a dominant pass rusher. It was non-existent. Our defensive line in the playoffs last year was non-existent. And I think that was detrimental to, I mean, look, let's be honest. The defense as a whole was trash in the playoffs. They were just trash. Had we had a healthy defensive line getting after it and getting up field into the quarterback and affecting his play, I think that could have been a huge help, maybe a game changer. So would I rather Joey miss 12 games in the regular season? We miss out on the one, but he's available for the playoffs. I think that's the answer. Despite how much I do want that one seed, I would rather have an awesome, explosive, elite pass rusher available to us for playoff games against Lamar, against Patrick Mahomes. Who else could we possibly play? Herbert, the Chargers might be a playoff team. Joe Burrow. I mean, these are the best, right? It's not going to matter so much during the regular season when you're going against the Jets and the Dolphins and some of these lower level teams. Like, we did our rankings of how much we fear these quarterbacks. We did that a couple episodes ago. You're not going to need him for a lot of those games. We should be able to beat some of these lower half teams without having to rely on our absolute superstars. So if it means putting him on the shelf, wrapping him in bubble wrap, we miss out on the one seed, but we have him for that run to the Super Bowl, I think I'm going to go with that because I want an elite pass rusher tracking them QBs down and making life miserable for them in the playoffs. That's what I want. So that's what I'm going to go with. Those are my thoughts. Training camp's been crazy. Couple good stories. Cook, Bosa. Oh, Keon Coleman, he started camp slow. Our reports are he's made a lot of flash plays. If he can step up his game and be dynamite and just be a solid, reliable option with the wide receivers, I think things are looking up. We got to get freaking Curtis Samuel going, though. He started to play well in the playoffs last year, but non-existent for most of the year. You got to have consistent options after Shakir. Kincaid needs to step up. Keon needs to step up. We got to get going. So one injury that I failed to mention was our kicker, Tyler Bass. Apparently he's dealing with some issues with his hip or something. I don't know, but he has been out. And good news is we haven't tried to sign anybody off the waiver wire, if you will. But yeah, we got to get T-Bass back on the field, back in action. We've already had to cut a punter. I know that was exciting news back at the beginning of camp. Another story that I forgot to mention early that everybody was going crazy over. We cut punter Jake Camarda, and people were like, oh my God, Jake Camarda's getting cut, and we only have Brad Robbins. What are we going to do? First of all, I don't know who the hell Brad Robbins is. Apparently, he didn't play at all last year, so I'm not really sure what to make of Brad. Don't call me Baskin Robbins, but that's our punter. So we have one punter left. Where's Sam Martin when you need him? Maybe he costs too much and now we got to pay James Cook, but we are rocking with Brad Robbins. And yeah, we'll see. So I don't know. T-Bass, you better get better because who knows? You might have to be called upon to punt. But which leads me to my fourth would you rather question of the day, because I thought this one was funny. I'm going through these camp headlines. I see this nonsense about cutting Camarda, and now we only have one punter. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake, this is my point, people. I don't care. I don't care who our punter is. In fact, here's the question I leave to you all. Would you rather have a punter on your team as part of your 53-man roster, knowing this offense, knowing we have Josh Allen, or would you rather be forced to go for every single fourth down in every game you play for the entire season? Maybe I'm crazy, but you can take the punter and you can blast him to the moon. I don't care who you are. Unless you're bringing back Brian Moorman, I don't want any punter on this team, because every time they don't go for it, I feel like we've failed. We failed in our quest to be a dominant offense. So get this punter the hell off my team. I don't care whether it's Baskin Robbins or Jake Camarda, Sam Martin, whoever the heck you want to bring off the waiver wire to punt. I don't want to see the punter more than once a game. So if you're only going to have him kick one ball, then you might as well fill the spot with somebody else. Then we can talk about the seventh, eighth, ninth wide receiver and how they're going to be so amazing if they only get a shot. It's all they need. Just give them a shot. But anyway, I thought that was worth talking about. Lots to look forward to. Hopefully these injuries will start to clear up. Hopefully the Bills and Cook can come to some sort of workable, viable financial situation. And hopefully Joey Bosa keeps looking awesome and he has a great season and is ready to roll in the playoffs. So there you go. Card marks, cardboard enthusiasts, how are we feeling? So much happening in the world of trading cards, in the world of sports cards. We have the National, the big sports card convention happening in Chicago as we speak. I'm seeing all the socials, seeing a lot of videos, seeing a lot of posts. And once again, you get both sides of the spectrum as it comes to opinions and thoughts. And it's the greatest thing in the hobby, or oh my God, the hobby's ruined and will never be saved ever again. And I don't know if I can keep doing this. So when I guess society has just turned into this, I don't know. It's either the best or it's the worst, and there's never a middle ground, and nobody can ever reach a consensus. But apparently, the National is extremely busy. There is the word I keep hearing over and over again, and this is even from people I know that are there. My buddy's there, and he said it's overwhelming. And I've heard that word numerous times on a lot of different videos and such. Some people are loving it. Some people are saying, you know, has this gotten too big? This is supposed to be for card enthusiasts, like the actual real card enthusiasts. We had Fanatics Fest back in New York, which was over a month ago or so. And that was more geared towards the sports fan, and a very small percentage of that festival, that get together, was for sports cards. But the idea behind Fanatics Fest was to try to get the average casual sports fan more invested in sports cards. And I get it. It's a good entry point. But the National is kind of the direct opposite of Fanatics Fest. And the National is supposed to be geared towards the guys that have been doing this forever, like the diehards, the ones that live, breathe, you know, sleep, love the hobby, just love the hobby. So it's supposed to be the biggest sports card convention on the planet. All the reports I'm hearing now are prices have gotten completely out of control. It's not for the average consumer anymore. People are getting priced completely out of it. Obviously, I'm not there. I don't know. I'm going to keep looking and hearing reviews, but I don't know where I fall on this, because I'm hearing people that Topps is doing this buy program where you can go to different vendors and buy different hobby boxes. And if you do, you can take your receipt, take your newly purchased hobby box and get credit, and you're given these silver packs, which have National exclusive card content in these packs, and you're supposed to be getting them for free, is what's advertised. Well, when you look at the markup of the hobby boxes that you have to buy in order to get these National exclusive silver packs, the markup is insane. I'm hearing complaints that a top series one hobby box, which originally retailed for $90 and you could find them, you know, around 110, 120, they're asking 160 to 190 for a hobby box of top series one, which is just madness to me. No one should ever pay that money for that product. And that's just to get a silver pack that has, what, five cards in it? 3 to 5 cards in it? No guaranteed hits? What are we doing? That's the thing that is frustrating. I'm watching YouTube videos, people that the content I actually consume, and a lot of it's terrible, but there's a few channels that I actually listen to, and one guy was like, I had to leave. I couldn't take it anymore. That's sad. That shouldn't be the state of the hobby. You have people that look forward to this every year. They save up money. They go to this convention. It's four or five days long. They spend money to travel and book hotels and whatnot. And then they get there and they're leaving after an afternoon because they just can't stand it. It's become too focused on commercialism or whatever you want to call it. So I don't know where I stand on it yet. Obviously, I'm not there, but I'm going to keep looking into it and seeing what other stories come out of it. And then clearly after this weekend, after it's all said and done and people actually get to calm down a little bit and give an honest assessment, hopefully we can reexamine the situation. But there's tons to talk about in the card market. There's been a lot of product that comes out. This last week was a busy release week. There were some products that I was actually really looking forward to. And I tell you what, the Topps site is a mess. It's a mess. I've said this before. You can't find anything. You literally have to go onto the Topps website. You have to go to the search bar and you have to type in very specifically what you want. If you're lucky, you will get a second page that follows up that lists the product you're looking for. And it'll say, hey, would you like to be notified when this product is going to be released? Because they don't tell you anything. They don't tell you dates. They don't tell you months. They don't tell you years. They don't tell you if it's ever going to be released again. They just said, okay, put your name, put your email and your phone, and we'll tell you if it's going to be released. And then if you're lucky, you'll get an email and you'll be given probably a 48 to 72 hour window notification of when the product is going to go live for either a pre-sale or a live actual sale. Like the product is out and you can buy it. So one product I was looking forward to was the Garbage Pail Kid 40th anniversary set. Now this was a Hobby Box exclusive only. I had missed out on the pre-sale. The pre-sale came and went. It sold out rather quickly, but I got a notification, an email from Topps saying, hey, we saw you're interested. Sales are live. I think it was Tuesday at noon. Well, most people work during the day. So I think I managed to get to the Topps website. It was like 12:30, maybe 12:25-ish, right around there. So it had only been live 25, 30 minutes. I go to the Topps site and they're sold out. And I'm just like, what the hell is going on? Even something like that, I am not in the market to pay $300, $400, $500, $600 for hobby boxes. I'm just not going to do it. I it's not in my budget. I just don't think it's a wise investment. And look, if you are that kind of consumer, that kind of hobbyist, great. And you can afford it. I have no issue with it. You spend your money how you want to spend your money. But for me personally, there's a limit on what I'm going to spend on product boxes, like hobby boxes and blaster boxes and things like that. I know what my limit is. And regardless of how I feel about the product, regardless of whether I really want the product, I'm just not going to spend X amount of dollars. So I think these GPK 40 anniversary hobby boxes were right around like 140. And I was like, eh, it's a little much, but the cards look awesome. It had a really cool checklist. I love the inserts and the parallels and the product. I was like, I'm going to give this a go. And yes, I missed the launch time by 20 minutes, 25 minutes at most. And by the time I got on there, they're gone. Same thing happened the very next day. 2025 Topps Bob Ross, The Joy of Baseball Season 2. I don't care what you say. I like these cards a lot. I think they're super cool. They were getting ready to launch Wednesday at 1 o'clock, somewhere around there. I believe that was the time frame. Got the email notification a couple days earlier in the week. And it said, be ready. Topps is going to launch this at 1 o'clock on Wednesday. Okay, awesome. The thing Topps doesn't tell you, they don't tell you how much these are going to cost. And it's garbage, if you ask me. Pure garbage. If you want to grow this hobby, you got to be transparent. Tell me what I'm going to get. Tell me what options are going to be available. And tell me how much is this freaking product going to cost me. What they want you to do is they want you to be an impulsive buyer and feel like the FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. They want you to instantly hit buy now and already have your card information in there. And so you're backed into a corner, right? Either you pay the $300, $400, $500 or you're not going to get it and it sucks to be you. So that's essentially what happened with this Bob Ross. But I missed this window by probably 15 minutes. I think I was on the Topps website at 1:15, maybe 1:20, and they're gone. And I'm like, They had, I think they had two SKUs. They had a light hobby box, which no clue what the price of that was because it came and went. And when it says sold out, it doesn't tell you what the price is. And then they had another SKU, which was listed for $350. And I think you only got 7-8 cards. And I'm just like, what is going on? This is complete madness. Complete madness. I am left wondering what the hell a normal consumer on a budget is buying anymore. Because I know what you can buy, because you could go down to my crappy ass Walmart and you could buy 10 different SKUs of basketball product because that's all they carry. But I don't want to collect that junk, so that's not me. But I digress. So I missed out on GPK, I missed out on Bob Ross. It's been crazy. And then Topps Chrome Baseball released just about a week and a half ago. There was a huge fanfare. I've kind of talked about it a little, but it released on a Wednesday, so we're just over a week and a half from the release. I've watched a ton of video. I've watched breaks on this product, and how can I say this kindly? In my opinion, I think this product is trash. It's trash. We've talked about the prices. The prices are insane. They're looking for $450 for a jumbo hobby box, $240 to $250 for a hobby box, and $40 for a blaster. Megas haven't released yet, but they're probably going to come in around $70. And I'm just looking at this checklist, and I'm looking at these breaks, and I'm looking at these people who are posting their hits on different socials, and I'm watching these videos, and I'm just like, what is this product? If you told me the prices were half of this, if you told me a jumbo was $120, or I'm sorry, a hobby was $120, I still might tell you that that's too much, because what I'm seeing is straight garbage. And it drives me crazy when I'm watching these breaks and these breakers are talking about these baseball players and they don't know anything about them. And they're talking about these baseball players and they're listing guys and they're pulling these autos. This auto checklist, the rookie checklist on this product, it's 166 rookies that you have never heard of. Never. I consider myself a big baseball fan. I'm real big into fantasy baseball. And I do a lot of deep dives into different teams and players, and I'm seeing this checklist and I'm like, 166 players of pure trash. They might not make the Savannah Bananas, and I'm like, what are we doing? And people are going crazy. Like, I'm seeing some of these cards. I'm like, a Logan Driscoll rookie card auto. I'm like, who the hell is Logan Driscoll? And these breakers are like, oh, it's a Logan Driscoll rookie autograph. And I'm like, you can use that to light a fire in the winter. That's what you can do with that. It's kindling. Like, what are we doing? Some of these names, I wrote some of these names down because I literally had never heard of them. So I already mentioned the great Logan Driscoll, but you have Parker Dunshee, Trevor McDonald. Stop me when you hear a name that you're like wowed over. Dustin Harris, Blake Dunn, Eric Wagaman. Anyone trying to snag a Eric Wagaman rookie card? How about a Ty Madden, Spencer Bivens, Tanner Gordon? I'm like, who the hell are these people? And these are the autographs you're pulling. So you buy a jumbo hobby for $450 and you're guaranteed, I think, three or four autos, and you pull these four of those clowns that I just read off. I feel like I just lit my money on fire. What did I buy? What did I buy? Because the rest of the set is not good either. Unless you're pulling a James Wood or like, there's so few good rookies in this product. That is just like, I don't know what we're doing, folks. I don't know what we're doing anymore. To charge this money and to have this breaker, the whole breaker thing, and we're probably going to do a podcast on that. These breakers have lost their freaking minds. They've lost their minds. And the way they hype this crap, that is total garbage. And they're like, oh, these guys are amazing. And like, these guys, like the guy, he's got a 7 ERA. Why do I think he's amazing? He's going to be out of the league in 2 months. Like, what are we getting excited about? And what did I just spend $450 on? Unless you're pulling some of these all-star players, you are wasting your freaking money. I'm sorry. I hate to be negative. I just don't know what we're doing anymore. It's crazy. But one thing I do know, because I always try to have some positive. I talked about this product 2 weeks ago, and it's just awesome. I finally got a mega box of Upper Deck Fleer Brilliance Superman. I got a mega box. I had a gift card for GameStop, and let me tell you, GameStop is quickly becoming the place to get trading cards, to get sports cards. That place is awesome. If you're a pro member, you get a discount, and most people that go into GameStop aren't going there for cards, so sometimes you can get lucky. I went in there and talked to the guy, and he's like, oh yeah, we just had four boxes of Marvel Chrome. And I'm like, oh my God, had I been in here the day before, I could have gotten four boxes of Marvel Chrome for $29.99 a piece instead of the $65.70 that these morons secondary markets are charging. But anyway, I opened Fleer Brilliance Superman. The mega box costs $50 and it's a 90 card base set. You get 14 packs per box, 5 cards per pack. So that is roughly, 70 cards. And I had a blast. Once I could actually open the packs, because they're probably the hardest packs I've ever opened, I had to use scissors for most of them. I felt like someone who's never hit the gym a day of my life, which is completely untrue. I work out every day, but I couldn't seem to open these Superman packs. Apparently, you open it and you're attacked by kryptonite and you have no strength to open the packs, but I digress. I had a absolute blast opening this set. Some of these, with the Mega Box, you're guaranteed four numbered cards. There's only two SKUs for this product. You get a Mega Box, which has purple parallels. You get one purple parallel in each pack, and then you get four numbered cards through the rest of the box. If you buy the blaster boxes, you can get them at GameStop, Target, or Walmart, and they have different color exclusives depending on which retail store you buy them in. So that's it. There's no hobby variant. It's simply megas or blasters, and your options are like $25, $30 for the blaster or $50 for the mega. I went with the mega. I would highly recommend the mega. They're awesome. The numbered cards look fantastic. I actually pulled a World of Metropolis Superman card, which I already put in a one touch. You could say what you want. I love the artwork on this card. It's awesome. And then I managed to pull a green kryptonite Superman card, which is numbered to $4.99. And that thing is sick looking. So I had an absolute blast with Fleer Brilliant Superman. I'm probably going to buy another mega box at some point. And yeah, so I would love to put the set together. It was a whole heck of a lot of fun. And it can be had without breaking the bank and me going to have to get a second mortgage. So there you go. But wrestling marks, how are we feeling? So SummerSlam came and went. And all in all, I would say it was a pretty good show. Now, this was the first SummerSlam that was divided into two nights. And a couple things to start off. First of all, the stage. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of people. I saw a lot of people on social that were complaining about the stage. A couple things about the stage. It was boring as hell until it got dark enough that the quad looking layered TV stage or whatever the hell they are calling that, before it really took effect. I would say for the first 2 hours of the pay-per-view, it looked dumb. And I'm like, there's nothing here. Why do we have this huge ass stage? And there was nothing to it. So I wasn't really a fan, but that's what happens when you put it in some of these mega stadiums. And I just thought it was lazy, but I get it. I was actually in this stadium for WrestleMania 35, I believe it was, and the stage was very similar. So it is what it is. A couple other things. You know how I feel about the advertisements all over the freaking place? Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, it actually got worse, because not only did they add advertisements to the outside of the ring posts, they now threw advertisements on the freaking turnbuckles. So each turnbuckle cover has a sponsor on it. I'm like, oh, we have gone way too far with this. So you got the Slim Jim tables, which were all weekend long, and now you got advertisements everywhere. But let's dive into the show. Night one starts off with Roman and Jay versus Braun and Braun. Legal team. Again, I think this match was affected by the fact that it was in broad daylight. I think had this match been on at 8:30, 9 o'clock, and you have the different lights going on, and you can see the full entrance of Roman Reigns, like, I think it was missing something for this match. I thought it was okay, just an okay, solid match. But ultimately, I think the wrong people won. I don't think Jay and Roman should have gone over. I think Braun and Braun should have won. I thought it would have been better long-term story, but regardless, we're going to deal with Roman sacrificing himself, and we're going to see how that plays out. All in all, okay match. I think it was greatly impacted by the time of day. Then we had the women's tag match between Bliss, Charlotte Flair against the Judgment Day. The first 10 minutes was okay. And then the last few minutes of this match, they turned it up and it was great. Had a good finish. And you have new tag team champions. I love the pairing. I was not a big Charlotte Flair mark, but you tag her with Alexa Bliss, and I think that is a team I'm invested in. So, like I said, good finish. Started off a little slow, but it got better. And then this was frustrating. This was really frustrating. Sami Zayn beat Karrion Kross, and I'm watching this match. It was okay. Sami does this suplex into the corner, and I thought Karrion was dead because he always seems to drop these guys right on their freaking head. And I'm like, can we maybe not do this match because it looks pretty rough? But anyway, Sami wins. Karrion Kross loses again, so he doesn't even get his win back. And I'm just like, what is going on? What is the purpose of this? It's so stupid. Here he is. He gets all this internet, in-ring, arena, momentum. Like, the fans want Kross to be successful. They want to see him pushed. And apparently Triple H says, I don't care what you want because we're going with Sami Zayn. But anyway, I thought that match was all right. And then we have Jade versus Tiffany Stratton for the belt, and you have Tiffy time going over. This was a good, fast-paced match. I think that there was not a lot of wasted moves. There's not a lot of wasted time. I really liked this match. I thought it was good. I thought Jade did well in it. I've been critical of some of her last few matches with Naomi and such, but I thought this was a great match. And I'm kind of surprised they didn't pull the trigger and put the belt on Jade. But no, this was a good match. And then we get to the Logan Paul, Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton and Jelly Roll. Now, I have been very critical of this. I know this is not for me. It's never for me. Some of these celebrity spots, they're just not my cup of tea, but I will give him this. That turnbuckle spot where Logan Paul does the frog splash onto Jelly Roll sitting on the announce table, that was sick. That was sick. He's standing on the turnbuckle. He does a little toast before he dives, and then great. Great spot. Tip of the cap to Mr. Roll there for putting himself in that position, because that was a hell of a bump he took there. That was great. And then the last match of the night, Punk versus Gunther to round out and finish night one. This was the match. These are the matches I love. These are old school, just knockdown, drag out, slugfest. I love these type of matches. What a match. This was the highlight of night one by far. Nothing else really came close to this. This was old school. I loved it. Punk winning, great. And then he's standing there celebrating. And one of the iconic, I'm going to put this as iconic briefcase cash-ins, Money in the Bank cash-ins ever. And of course, it's Seth Rollins. He had me fooled. Tip of the cap, WWE, you got me. I texted my kids. I texted my buddy, and I'm like, I got. Yet again, here we go. I was not expecting this at all. He pulled a Willy Wonka on the top of the ramp. He rips off the knee brace. He throws the crutches. He's ripping the suit coat off. It was great. Great, great, great. And then he does. He obviously cashes in. He beats Punk. He hits him with the curb stomp. He wins the belt. And he does the over-the-head lasso swing with the belt. It's very similar to when he cashed in at WrestleMania. Just awesome. Awesome. So night one, I thought night one was okay. And then it ended with a just big freaking cherry on top with the Punk Gunther. Great match, followed by the Rollins cash in. Great. We get to night two. I loved the women's match. I loved that Naomi came out to the ring with her dad playing guitar. Awesome touch there. That was fantastic. That match was great. I was hoping they weren't going to rip the belt off Naomi after that successful Money in the Bank women's cash in. I wanted to see her retain. I thought it was great. The one nitpick I had with this match is every time one of the three went to the top of the turnbuckle to do a move, the other two were telegraphing it and just standing there waiting for what it seemed like 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds. Like, you got to speed this up. You can't have two quote unquote downed opponents standing there waiting to catch you. And then just like, what are we doing? Speed this up a little bit. Yeah, it looks terrible, but that's my only nitpick. Thought that match was great. So happy to see Naomi retain. Then the six team TLC tag match. Insane. Car wreck after car wreck after car wreck. Candice LeRae taking the bump off the mega ladder through the ladder set up on the outside of the ring was nasty. That was a nasty fall. Hope she's okay, but that match was great. Hopefully, this just keeps pushing the Wyatt Six. I thought it was a good choice for them to retain. That was a fan-freaking-tastic match. If you haven't got a chance to watch, go back and watch that. Becky, the next match, Becky versus Lyra Valkyria. This match was awesome. Becky comes out to new music, which I was really shocked, maybe a little disappointed to see, but hopefully it'll grow on me. But I loved her old ring entrance music, one of my favorites of all time. But they literally beat the absolute crap out of each other during this match. I thought it was a great match. It was given a real tough spot coming on right after the TLC match, but I thought they crushed it. Now, when I look back at this match, this is going to be the zip tie match of doom, because if you watch carefully after Becky zip ties her hands, which Lyra's literally holding her hands completely still while Becky's struggling to put the zip tie on. Anyway, this zip tie breaks and Lyra does an awesome job covering it. You could tell that it broke, but when she goes back under the ring, she comes out with new and improved zip ties on. So I thought this is going to be the zip tie match. It was great, but little nitpicky things, but that match was great. Like I said, they beat the absolute crap out of each other. We have a Bayley interference that's going to tie back into this story somehow. So we'll probably get Lyra versus Bayley moving forward. Cage match. I don't know. This was Solo versus Jacob Fatu, and this is exactly what I expected. Exactly what I thought it was going to be. A super schmoz fest with Jimmy and Tala Tonga, a.k.a. Nash Pac, you know, the love child of Kevin Nash and X-Pac, but whatever. I just thought this match was, it was by far the worst match of the night. I know they tried. It just wasn't for me. This match did nothing for me. The AJ Dom Mysterio match. This was awesome. I love the throwback. AJ coming out in Eddie's car looking like Eddie with the outfit. It was awesome. He did his moveset. It was great. There was a lot of good stuff here. Excellent match. A lot of good comical stuff. You got to break these long shows up. And I think this is exactly what we needed before the main event. Give me a little comedy. Give me a little, you know, lighten the mood up a little after the car wrecks we had been seeing up to this point. But I thought AJ did well. Dom is a star in the making. I think that was a great match. And then finally, the main event of the night, Cena versus Cody. What can I say? It started off with a bang with the entrances. The entrances were awesome. Cody, great entrance. We had John Cena. The screen started black, which at night, this is exactly my point about what I said at the beginning, was the time of day can make or break these matches. And the fact that it was pitch black, the lights, the screens go dark. You originally see John Cena with the black background, and then it changes to the color, and you get the old school rundown with the pointing to the camera and the towel and the slide through the ropes. Awesome. Everybody wanted to see it. We've been waiting 4 months for this moment. And we finally got it. This was by far his greatest match on this going away tour. It was probably his best match in like the last, I don't know, 3-4 years. It was awesome. This match was great. I have no complaints about the match. I wanted Cena to retain, but you can't always get what you want. I thought it was well done. Cody wins, obviously. He leaves the ring. Cena's in. And the shock of the night. I was shocked when Seth cashed in. I was even more shocked to hear and see Brock Lesnar standing there on the top of the ramp and then come down and hit Cena with the F5. Shocked. That's all I could say. I can't believe they pulled the trigger and brought him back with all the allegations, and I'm not even going to get into that, but I was shocked to see Brock Lesnar back at SummerSlam. And obviously, this is the reason they decided to flip the switch, turn John back to the good guy, because this is the next feud moving forward. Not a lot of people are happy about this, and I get it, but this was one of the most important Cena feuds in the last 20 years, and we shall see what happens. So all in all, I thought Night 2 crushed it. Night 2 was really good with the exception of the cage match, which wasn't for me. I thought Night 2 was way better, and the main event at Night 1, excellent stuff. But all in all, great SummerSlam, great show, very entertaining. And I am very interested to see where we go from here. But I think that's going to wrap it up. If you've enjoyed this episode or any episode of the 3T's podcast, do me a favor and share it with someone you know. I don't care if they're a mafia member, a card collector, or someone who just happens to love wrestling. I'm trying to grow this one episode at a time. So please leave me a quick review. hit that follow button, like and subscribe wherever you can, wherever you listen to your podcast. I appreciate you all very, very much. So until next time, whether it's ripping packs, breaking tables, or dropping elbows, keep doing what you love. And as always, go Bills!